Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to all who are sharing this program this evening. This is Conversations. I am one of your co-hosts. My name is Oscar Crawford. I will be bringing in my shared co-host in just a moment. Tonight, we are going to be talking about consensual sex is a matter of self-respect. Incest, sexual battery, sexual assault, and rape occur when a sexually aggressive person, usually a man, assumes privilege to have sex with an underage child or adolescent. Neither may give consent. The same occurs when a sexually aggressive person, usually a man, assumes privilege to have sex with an adult without being granted permission or privilege. Tonight's episode will examine ways people can arrive at shared consensual experience without anyone being insecure, intimidated, or forced to do something they do not want to do. Thank you again for joining us for Conversations. You may join with us and call in about a half an hour. Our second half hour, we're going to take calls and answer some questions at the number. Go ahead and log this number in, 563-999-3549. 563-999-3549. Again, my name is Oscar Crawford, and I welcome you. Now, I want to introduce co-host for this evening's program, Rebecca Bennett. Good evening, Rebecca.
Hello, hello, hello. How are we tonight?
We are happening. How things in Georgia? I got you.
Wonderful. Actually, we're enjoying crazy weather, so we're good to go for the winter. 68 degrees today.
Okay, did you get an opportunity to watch the full eclipse last night?
I did.
Yeah,
I can't say that I really saw a whole lot, but it was there.
Well, you know, in our neighborhood tonight, we think people are being affected by the full moon. So, you know, it has its effect on people. If the moon can pull the waters on the earth, it can certainly affect all this water that's in our bodies. So we always expect anything on a full moon. Are you ready for this conversation?
I am ready for this conversation. Let's do
this. Okay, so what are the things, and we'll give a definition in just a bit. But what are the things you immediately think of when you think of consensual sex? And maybe set it up in terms of consensual sex as opposed to what?
So I want to kind of tie in from our very last conversation that we had on our Thursday show. As many of our viewers know, I referenced the fact that I am said victim from such violent crime when I was very young. So for me, sex became a funny bird that I had to learn to navigate. In a different kind of sense than most people have to learn to navigate, because it was something that was fear-based. So when I think of consensual sex, or I think of how that affects every choice you make from there on out, as a youngster, I had to learn to be in a room with family again that kind of takes you back and throws you in a different direction than most people. And so dealing with consensual sex as a teenager is something that is difficult even within its own right. So when you throw the fear-based of now you no longer want to be in a room with your father or your brothers or that kind of thing, definitely adds a different element to what is consent and how important having that conversation is and finding your way to get comfortable with that again. So for me, I think it had a lot of different elements and a lot of different layers that I had to relearn. You'll hear me reference that as my hardwiring. So when I had to rewrite that hardwiring, so to speak, that was a beast in within itself that became a horse of different colors all the way through. So we'll dive into that probably later.
No, I got that. And one of the things that I have had to deal with as a guy over the years, there would be women who would approach me from time to time and indicate that they wanted to be sexual with me in a really big hurry. And, you know, I just never went for what somebody suggested to me first, because I needed to know whether they were home and capable of making a decision, because I didn't want to be affected in a negative context later on. So there were times when women would say, yeah, I want to do this with you, and I could really tell they didn't. And I had to always protect myself by being able to if they did change their mind in any context on the way to our actually getting together, then I would be able to do that without going through any change and still be okay with who I am. So I think we're going to talk about a number of things tonight. So let me give a definition of what consensual sex is, and then we'll continue our conversation from there. Consensual sex activity happens when each partner willingly chooses to participate. Open communication about expectations and desires is a critical factor in obtaining consent. So consent must be verbal and clear. Your partner must be given every opportunity to communicate his or her wishes. No means no, and when in doubt, ask. If you need to ask again, ask again. The person needs to be sober and unimpaired. They need to be consistent and prompt, and people need to be in positions where they are not forced or feel threatened, and one must be old enough to give consent. So let's begin having you talk about that accepted definition amongst professionals and in legal context. How do you relate to that kind of definition of consensual sex?
Oh, I think that has to do on many different layers and levels when you get into a legal realm of things. Consent is one thing that I have tried to get people to have an honest conversation, especially because in the middle you can get somebody, say, like myself, who's had to go through that violence, depending on how you may have had that wonderful conversation at the beginning, so you have one mindset. I may be on one page and my partner on a different, and you may get midway through the act, and all of a sudden, for me, the script changed, either because my mental capacity went somewhere else based on the violence that I had been involved with. You touch me in a certain way, and it turns to something other than in that moment with that person. So, I think consent is kind of moment by moment. There are times where mid-act you may find a woman that pulls away or a man that pulls away. And I think that comes from kind of maybe knowing your partner a little. You and I discussed this on one of the previous shows, not just picking up strange and 5 minutes later going at it. So I think there has to be that conversation of knowing that person a little bit better than just pick them up one night at a bar and, kind of went from there. In the realms of consent, for it not to affect us negatively, and I think far too often people only get the yes, wait for that very initial yes and go with it, to a ton of legalities after the fact, especially if somebody doesn't exactly tell you the truth about their age. I was 13 going on 30 for so many years it wasn't even funny, and now I'm well into my 40s and told I look like I'm 35, so... I think you have to kind of be really smart about it, and I don't know that we're really smart about it anymore.
Well, here's the thing. Here's how I think our conversation will be really beneficial to people. In a month, I will be 65, and so that hadn't really gone away. There's still women who, either try to make cuckoo eye contact or have some casual conversation with me that would suggest they have interest, and I'm saying, what is on your mind? You have no idea the kind of person I am. I could be a serial killer, for all you know, and you're coming on to me like you want to give me your life, body, and soul. And that, for me, I got to be honest here. I didn't have this same perspective as a teen or in my early 20s or 30s. Some of that came with maturity, because in order to protect another person, you've got to be able to protect yourself first. So we really do have to bring a very conscious and intentional, deliberate attitude as an adult to these kinds of transactions, because they're not just face value anymore. You don't really know anything about somebody other than the fact that they pretend they got the hots for you. You just don't know where they've been and what kind of present they bring you that could be long-lasting. Are you with me?
Oh, I agree 100%. And it's funny because I proverbially have been termed the flirt forever in my entire life. The cosmic joke between me and my girlfriends is I can walk into a room and know absolutely not the first person, speak with nothing more than a hello, and 10 minutes into that scenario, the women in the room have already coined me to be having an affair with several other people in the room, which is ironically funny because I just go, all I said was hello. I just walked into the room and smiled and said hello. So I think for people like you and I, we have an intention within ourselves where we have gone through this process. And for me, not having gone through the process, somewhat even magnified that internal personality even more so because it was raw energy that hadn't been harnessed and hadn't had any real definition to it. So when you're an intentional person and your thought processes are so prevalent in who you are as a person, I think it's projected. So while people saw my personality, just assumed maybe that I was a certain way when we all know that I'm probably not nearly as geared to some of this as people think me to be. So a simple hello is read in so many ways that it's not even funny, at least for me, has been my case through the years. So.
No, I understand. And one of the things, I've never really quite understood this about my life, but it doesn't matter where on the planet I am, people tend to project at me, or it seems that people tend to project at me, that I'm just ready to go at the drop of a hat. I've actually walked into social settings with a woman on my arm, and another woman say to me, if you will dump this that you're with, I can take care of you in ways that you'll find very pleasant. And I'd ask the woman I was with, what is on my forehead that is attracting that kind of attention? Because I certainly didn't walk in with a sign saying, hey, you know, I want to disrespect the woman I'm with. Who will help me do that? That was not even on my mind. And yet those kinds of things have followed. So one of the things that I think you and I both admitted over the years is that until people can have a real adult conversation about things like this, there's going to be a whole lot of people still do things that have really negative consequences for their lives over a period of time. And only at that point when we do approach sexuality generally and our own sexuality specifically, can we come to any really adult perspectives on how to manage our life and behavior. Talk to me.
It's funny, I have a friend, a very dear friend, and we call this the him, her, or them conversation, which is really funny because it originated in the middle of the lake during one of our wonderful psychology conversations with just me and him on the boat. So, but this is exactly the aspect that we were discussing, is that far too often, especially in the single realm where you're still in the green pasture, so to speak, that conversation's not had. And either it's fear-based, if you bring it up, are you jumping to a conclusion, assuming something is going to happen that maybe wasn't, you know, or are you wanting something, or is the person that you're potentially going to be with want something that you may not want, and how do you bring that up? And so as you get into somebody who the reference of the conversation we were having was more about various partners or exploring sexuality is kind of where that sentence derived from. And so we've termed that the him, her, or them conversation, depending on what aspect of it, you know, they were looking to have. And I mean, and so in the course of what is sex in today's time, when you have toys and dominant submissives, threesomes, I mean, when you run the gamut of what is possibility for sex today, those are definitely things that you need to have a conversation with before you just get into the middle and try something that could be potentially legal for you on the backside.
Okay, so let me suggest this to people who are either currently listening or may ever listen to this podcast as it's stored online. One of the things, ladies and gentlemen, that we are not saying, we are not being judgmental about the adult behavior that you are engaging in. If you are a grown adult and capable of making your own decisions, you have the kind of sex you want to, that you're big enough and responsible enough to be involved in. That's your privilege. What we are going to be talking about further on tonight is that every adult ought to have and ought to assume responsibility as a matter of self-respect to govern what happens to them and their body. Everybody that is an adult is free to engage in the behavior that they wish that doesn't harm them or another person. They do whatever they want, and we commend you to that. Be who you are. But we want to minimize the potential for people to be harmed. And we're not just talking about adults. Some of the things that we're talking about tonight are when children are being used for sex by adults who are primarily members of their family. You know, if I were a judge and jury, that person would be shot in the middle of the courtroom floor after being pronounced guilty. But, you know, I don't get to make those kinds of calls. But that is one of the things that really burns me from my inside out. If you hurt children as a result of your sex need, you need to get off my planet. I'm going to say that again because it's really ugly and I really mean it. If you need to have sex with children, you need to get off my planet. Now, Rebecca, help bring me back to a calmer context. Let's talk to people about, and maybe you and I will role play this out in a bit. Help people understand, like, let's say you meet somebody tonight. Ask that out. How do you arrive at whether or not you are significantly interested in a sexual contact with a person and how you may get to the conversation before you're in a situation and there's no time for the conversation and everything is awkward? Can you talk about that a bit?
I can. I think for me, it has always been a very chemistry-based scenario. I pretty much know from the word go in that first realm of hello, if that's something I'd ever even be interested in. So if in hello, there's no spark, there's no connection at all, you're probably going to get a hello, a nice smile, and I'm going to shake your hand, wish you well, and walk away, and you'll be lucky if I remember your name in the morning because I struggle with names. So the people in my life that I've met that I go, wow, inertia to begin with, are going to be the people that I would even begin to have that scenario with. And for me, it's more about a conversation of who they are, finding out, you know, details about how they make decisions, the kind of driving force behind who they are. And I think you can do that in some easy questions to begin with.
I think one of the greatest questions we can ask somebody initially is, what do you want? What is your interest here? If you've approached me or if we've decided to have a conversation that's private to ourselves, whether it's over coffee or taking a walk in the park, what do you want? What about me interests you? And how about let's talk about that so I can decide whether or not that interests me? Now, I come to that as a result of women telling me over the years, hey, Oscar, I don't mind a man asking me for sex, but go ahead and get it out the way so I can know what we're really dealing with. Don't pretend that you have other interests. Put it on the table. Let me make an adult choice to either be involved or not.
That was where I was going with it.
Okay. Then pick it up and run some more.
Well, I mean, I just think, I always hear the initial answer to what do you want, and then I'm always a little bit skeptical. Do you really know? I mean, do you know yourself well enough to know what you want? And I say that only because I know me well enough to know. So for me, sex can be extremely fun. And then, of course, as I referenced throughout the show, it can be extremely horrific. So knowing those areas for myself, a lot of times I hear the answer and immediately put it in the context of, yeah, that would be a lot of fun for me, or that would be traumatic for me. And so depending on where you fall with that answer or how well I believe you know what you want and are capable of doing what it is you've said you want, is going to depend on, you know, whether you get Bella or Becca, so to speak.
Right. Well, there are two scenarios in my life that always stand out that I use as teaching moments. And both are intense, and as I experience them, I look back and I'm really thankful to God on who I am, because they both could have ended up really messy. When I was in college, a woman who was a brother to a good friend, who was sister to a good friend of mine, just had to give Oscar attention, and so I couldn't shake her, because she was always up under me, and I couldn't really get rid of her because she's my friend's sister. And so she came to visit my house one night, and she and her brother and I actually shared an apartment at the time. And so she came and she presented herself, and I said, okay, you really need to be sure that you want to do what you want to do, because I really don't think you want to do this. Oh, no, I'm ready. Okay, so here is the scenario. We are both dressed for this, which means we've got no clothes on and everything's ready to happen. Bodies are ready and charged. And as a guy, you know, I'm ready to do my thing. And just as I'm ready to merge with her, she says, oh, my goodness, you're right. And so the trigger that I was about to pull didn't get to get pulled. And so I looked at her and said, listen, you need to be really thankful that I am who I am, because I know a whole bunch of dudes would now beat you up and take what you had said you would offer. And so I took my deep breath. I stood up. I put my clothes on and walked away and said, now, you need to go home. You need to go home. And the second one is different, but the same scenario. This was a woman that I wanted, right? And I had wooed and courted her, and we'd spent time together. And we'd had all the conversations that were going to lead to this beautiful moment. And so when it came time for that to be consummated, she looked up at me as I looked down at her, and she says, oh, this is way too easy for you. Oh, so that said to me, let's put up another red light here. Let's swallow, take a deep breath, stand up, you know, and get centered again. And so I ruled that out, because I cannot afford to wake up tomorrow morning and somebody say, oh, you forced me to do something. No, I stay going out like that. Talk to me.
I definitely 100% agree with the fact that I don't know that everybody is as conscious of what they want. So there's a perceived desire for the single person you walk into said bar room. Of course, for me, a bar is always an extremely complicated place, because I walk in and I smile and do the whole scenario I described a few minutes ago. And immediately there's always two or three that just naturally assume this is how the night is going to end up. And so that's always something I have to kind of stressfully navigate in saying no. And then you say no again and you continually say no, only because I just don't, that's not my comfort zone. It's not where I originate, that you know what you know that you know, so to speak. So I have to deal with that very delicately, because for me, my initial response is generally always, no, thank you, I'm good. I can take care of that myself. As a single woman,
okay.
I'm good. Only because I, like you, I have experienced what is the emptiness and the harsh side of what that wake up in the morning is. And so I think as you try to find what is your self-respect as you go through life, you have to be able to find that nucleus within you that says, I'm okay not to. And I think far too many times the consent of what is yes is one that, oh my gosh, I've gotten so far into this now that I don't feel like I can say no. And I think that represents a host of where consensual issues and where sex gets so nasty and negative and becomes something that leaves us with all of that regret the next morning.
Well,
we really don't know what we want.
I know. Here's one of the things that I think has always been a problem with men understanding that very simple two-letter word, no. From the time television came into my life in the 50s and 60s, there were films of cowboys, you know, who would be chasing the girl, who on one hand seemed to be interested, but not really. And so at the point in the script where the cowboy grabbed her and pulled her in his arms and started to kiss her, she's fighting him off, and he's pressing at her, and she's fighting, and he's pressing, and then she yields. And so men have taken that to mean, and as a woman, you know this even better than I'm about to say, men don't believe no means no. And I'm speaking generally here. There are really competent, really good men who respect women, who are going to go over and above to make sure that women are not disrespected. But we've seen prominent men who will push themselves at women even after hearing no, and in the end get to take that woman. And so that's been a matter of significant confusion, especially when men have some notion of leadership roles or popularity as actors or politicians or preachers. You know, they get themselves in scenarios with women where no is no longer part of the English language. It's just a momentary inconvenience. What are your thoughts?
That's interesting, because I know a variety of women, and for me, I don't know that I've ever met a man that when I said no, except for one, and I was too young to be as assertive as I am now. However, no typically is not something that you don't get with me, just as well as yes is extremely obvious as well. So, but I do believe I have friends and female acquaintances that I know play that game. And for me, that's one of the single most, I mean, just at my gut level, horrific things that I see happen all the time is the game playing that goes on. And my male friends will be the first to tell you that. I don't do that. I don't play games. I don't do the game thing well. It's just a waste of my time, and I just choose not to get into the BS of what all of that, you know, plays into. And but I see women do it all the time. The just atypical no, and it's playful, and they're bantering back and forth, and you know, just enough to kind of keep them interested, and then cave. And you know, and then typically they're the ones that 2 days later, 3 days later, are sitting next to me crying, telling me how empty it was, telling me how bad they thought, you know, well, they shouldn't have done it, yada yada yada. And I often say to them, why did you not think about that a little bit? You know, this is not the first time you've had this scenario, whatever. And typically what I hear them come back to is they weren't strong enough. They felt like if they didn't say yes, the evening would have ended right there. So they continued the game, got what they wanted out of the evening, and then giving the person they were with what they wanted was just a byproduct of being able to have a night out and have fun. And I, you know, and I tell them all the time, you navigated that way wrong from the get go. And so I think, you know, for me, it's about training women to be a little bit more self-respecting. I think I just don't think women are as into themselves as they need to be. I don't think there's a confidence there when it comes to the interface with men that they're comfortable with. So they let other people dictate that conversation for them, which I think is just a huge negative. And I think that's where we kind of have to get people in general, not just women, but people in general to that place where they have that confidence to have that conversation. Because I think that's more where it lies, themselves enough to have that conversation, and they're not confident enough about themselves to have that conversation, and therefore they don't. And then they're left with all the byproducts, the negativity of what sex brings to it, rather than that euphoric, positive place that it was meant to be in the relationship form. So,
okay. So listen, we're going to take a break in just a moment. I want to let people know that we're getting ready to take some questions in. And I've already had a few through email. Some people want to just have their question read and us talk about it. They don't necessarily want to have their name aired. But I want to give everybody the number, the call-in number. We'll begin to take your call very shortly. Have the number, 563-999-3549. 563-999-3549. Or you can email your question to info, at OscarCrawfordMedia.com. We'll be right back. Okay, we're back, and I'm on air with my good friend Rebecca Bennett. We are talking tonight about consensual sex as a matter of self-respect, and one of the things we'd like to recommend to other adults is that you be able to engage conversations with your friends, men and women, as openly as you hear us talking. Rebecca and I are good friends. We have talked about everything. If we haven't talked about it, it's just because we haven't thought about it yet. I promise you we're likely to get to it yet. Okay, so Rebecca, let me go over a couple of questions and give you an opportunity to speak to them that have come through email, and we'll begin from there. The first one says, how do I know I gave consent? Well, I'm just going to start with, how do I know I gave consent?
How do you know you gave consent?
Yeah, I find the question interesting too, but I don't want to do any value judgment with it. How do I know I gave consent?
That's kind of interesting for me because, I mean, obviously, it's kind of an onion kind of question, so it has layers. On the surface, if you are engaging in the prerequisites of what sex is, kissing, the petting, the flirtatious conversation, possibly dirty talk, light touching clothes still on. Obviously, in that surface type nature, if you are engaging in those, you are consenting. You are leading that person to believe that this could possibly go further than here. If you take that and maybe go sideways a little bit, did you start all of that without having the conversation first? So have you truly given consent? I'd have to say professionally and legally, no, because there wasn't that actual, this is the expectation, this is what, you know, we plan on doing, are you game, are you not? However, I can't say that you didn't give consent because you're still engaged if you're still in the midst of that act. So I think you have to really be cautious and careful if you start the said action before you have the said conversation, because you could potentially get midstream. And if you have chosen a partner that you don't know, or it's a stranger or somebody that's less respectful to the opposite sex, then I think you open yourself up for a whole host of scenarios that are going to be bad. And you potentially then, let me just kind of say this as a woman who was raped, no matter whether you, in the course of my scenario, I was well underage, so I was what is considered a kid. When you, don't have the opportunity to say yes or no, you still have to interface and overcome some stigmas, some backlash, so to speak, that I didn't ask for. I didn't get the opportunity to wear certain scarlet letters. However, they were something post-act I still had to deal with. So I think you have to be very, very cautious when it comes to, if you're not sure that you did, you probably need to take a step back and be like, okay, we need to have a conversation before we do or go any further. And I think if ever there's a question that you're not sure that you have or you have not, you probably need to disengage from whatever you're in and take a break and actually think about what it is you're doing and what you're fixing to do, so that you can make sure you're going to be okay with what that's going to look like in the morning.
Okay, let's complicate
the question. I hope that answered their question.
No, I think you did fine. I think you did fine. One of the things that I've got the other side of this equation. I'm the guy. You know, if you had sex with somebody, whether you verbally gave consent or not, and you're only now questioning it, you know, legally, if it was pushed, right? A legal process may say that consent was not given. The however becomes, you know, were you involved? Were you capable of giving consent? Were you drunk? Were you high? You know, there'd be a whole lot of factors that would go into examining that legally. But my real feeling is if you have to ask yourself or someone else if you gave consent after the fact, we've got some real questions you need to prevent coming up ever again. Because you're not going to get any real, satisfaction from asking the question backwards. You can only apply the need to ask the question backwards to your future events. Does that make sense to you?
Oh, definitely. Exactly. You and I are on the same page.
Okay, so let's complicate it and talk about how much does alcohol and drug use factor into consent? You know, two drinks, three drinks, one joint, two. And we're only talking about notions now because I know that neither of us are likely to know what that fine line is by some scientific evaluation. But when should a person, or is a person going to be capable of making a decision like that if they are either drunk or high or both? Talk to me.
I don't know that you can, and I say that only, and I kind of speak from experience, went through many years. And let me preface this by saying, if you've ever been in that violent scenario, and of course, like I say, for me, my scenario happened very young. So I went through my teenage years marred by that act. So sex for me from there on out, especially through my teenage years, was something that was not navigated well. And I can look back now and find those exact moments where there was the drunkenness or there was the, you know, we arrived at a party. I rode with single female friends of mine and woke up the next morning with said strange dude. Definitely alcohol was a large factor in some of that. And for me, I think if you just kind of looked at that scenario based on how I just said that, you would kind of paint me in a very negative light. But for me, the underlying what was happening, especially when you relate it back to consent, is there was so much emotion and turmoil and anger and resentment and regret and just so many, I mean, off the wall emotions that were bouncing around inside me that actually had nothing to do with the person that I was with or the scenario I was in or the alcohol I was drinking or any of that. It directly related back to that initial contact with sex that was so destructive. And so therefore, if you don't go through the proper fixing of those, how that happened and rolling out what those emotions are going to look like down the road, you get yourself in a position where, like for me, I just wanted to be numb, and I knew I needed to be able to interface and kind of do that, be in a room with people and not feel scared or not, you know, have so many of the other connotations that naturally came with what had happened to me. And so for me, drinking was, you know, definitely one of them that made life easier. However, again, if you're not as assertive and somewhat control personality as I am, that can go sideways on you. So if you get drunk, you definitely get taken advantage of. Now, I myself can't say that I actually allowed any of that to ever happen to me, even when I was drunk. So it wasn't something that I didn't consent to doing. However, the emptiness, that still negative interface of what the deed produced the next morning was still, you know, a negative for me that I had to work through and gain ground in, you know, to become a much healthier individual. And I wouldn't say that happened until my 30s. So it took about 15 years to kind of work through what was rape to what then became consensual on my terms. That makes sense.
I think that's a good point that I needed to, I wanted to make sure to remember to bring that into the conversation for my own research and working with women over the last 25, 30 years. To say that what you just said about being age 30 before it really became a conscious awareness for you that you could literally engage. My finding has been that 7 in 10 women I've met the last 25 to 30 years have indicated to me that they have experienced sexual violence as an adult or as children. And without getting help, without getting psychological help and counseling behind those events in their lives, many would be in their mid-30s after a number of relationships that were as destructive as the events that had occurred earlier in their lives. So they begin to think, okay, maybe there is something here I need to take another look at and get some help and reorient my thinking about the way I'm living my life. And so that's pretty consistent. And that's consistent whether, and I've looked at it with people who are enlisted in the military as opposed to women who have not. It's pretty consistent. The research told me some years ago that one in every two women who enlisted in the military had experienced sexual violence before enlisting and would again while on active duty. And for the women who've gone to the theaters of war in Iraq and Afghanistan, when they would experience sexual violence with their military brothers who would force them to have sex, unconsensual, that event would lead to PTSD for them, and then the diagnosis, well, the act would have been considered an act of friendly fire. Okay, there's another one of them disgusting moments for me. Talk to us a bit about, and just go for a little bit about the whole PTSD aspect of your life behind the event that happened to you as an early teen. Well, you could not give consent to what took place.
That would be like several hours worth of conversation to unroll what is PTSD for me. There's one thing that before we go into PTSD that I want to kind of reference back to what you said originally, and I think a lot of that goes back to this underlying society thought process when it comes to the difference between sex and consent between men and women. Sex for men is considered notches in your belt. It's something for you to be proud of. You are allowed to talk about it, will stroke your ego and tell you, you must be fantastic. You know, and the flip side of that for us is we become very tawdry and tainted, and it's an extreme negative. So if a woman is empowered and okay with her sexuality, we immediately become a whore. And I think that gap, that it's okay for you and it's not okay for me, is something that in some very underlying tones, due to the fact that there's not that in-place conversation that happens more often than not, is exactly where the negatives and the craziness from what is, you know, sex, where all that arrives at. So for me, hopping on into PTSD was a crazy, absurd, I've had people hear me say this, that it took them back, and they've had to come back to me days, weeks, months later and say, I didn't understand it when I heard you say it until I gave it a whole lot of thought. So for me, there are several areas that were far worse than the deed. Definitely destructive and hard and geared me into a pit of rage and emotions that were so hard to deal with so young. The step beyond that of what made that so much worse and so much harder to deal with arrived from the fact that there was blame, there was disbelief, there was a lot of guilt and shame, and so I was then being held responsible as well as guilty for what happened. And I don't think most people stop to think about rape in that scenario, because while the act was hard and horrible, the act itself is not what took me 15 years to unravel from. So hear me when I say that rape is hard and it was horrible and I lived through it. However, it was physical, and the emotional attachment of what became after that in being made responsible and guilty is what became traumatic. And I don't think people oftentimes separate the two, is they believe rape was physically something that happened to you and not mentally and emotionally something that happens to you. And there's a huge gap.
I hear that. One of the things that has always, and really, this, I had to go to therapy for, I always keep a therapist in my friend circle, and I had to go to therapy once because so many women were telling me so much information about what had happened to them, like your story and others. I was asking myself, why am I the recipient of all of this information? I could be at lunch with a professional woman making plans for some event I was going to facilitate at a university or a business. And when that moment was to be finished, and I'm getting ready to go pay the check or something, that woman would get me by my coattail or my sleeve and say, can I tell you one more thing? And I'm not talking about children here. I'm not talking about teens. I'm not talking about people in their early 20s. I'm talking about people in their 40s and 50s. And here again, I can give face to and attention and heart and energy to hurting people. But it began to challenge me about why was that coming to me. And only after I sought some counsel with people I have respect for did I come to accept that whatever is invested in me greater than myself had prepared me to be able to be open and give love to people who are going through that experience. So I grew more thankful for it. Did it happen any less? Not at all. Not at all. It continued to happen. Okay, let me just give some voice to what we're doing again, because we're about to be in our last 15 minutes of time together. We are talking about consensual sex tonight. Is a matter of self-respect. And essentially, Rebecca and I are saying that adults must be responsible for our behavior, and the time to talk about when we're going to have sex with somebody is not where we're in the middle of our exchange of heat energy and almost out of control. The time to have that conversation is before we get there, so that you are free to be yourself in that moment and go on and do what adults do. I hope you're hearing what I'm saying there. That conversation, consensual sex, needs to be managed before things get hot and involved, where it becomes awkward. Now, what I'm also saying is that men or women have the privilege to say no at any time they want. We'll be right back. Okay, Rebecca, we've got a few more questions we'll try to reach before we close out tonight. And I want to thank everybody who's listening. One day we will be able to invite a number of people who will be involved in our conversation with us, and we're looking forward to that. But for those of you who sent questions in, we appreciate you too. Must I give consent every time I have sex with somebody? That's the next question.
Yes. Yes. And hell yes. It is not something that you do not get to give consent for. I don't care if it's the same person that you're giving consent to for the next 10 years. I believe every time the act happens, there has to be that open knowledge that this act, this time, with you, is something I want to do. And I'm glad that that question got brought up, because that was one of the things that I wanted to make sure that we touched on before the end of the show. Is in a marriage scenario where you are married to this person, do you still feel like you need to gain consent?
Okay, so it's a great question, because here's something you need. I've probably told you this about the way I negotiated my interest on the front side of getting married. You know, I needed to work all that out up front. Because, you know, when I was in the market, I wasn't looking for somebody rich or somebody with degrees or somebody with property. I was looking for a woman. So I had all that conversation up front. Now, let me tell you what that didn't mean. That did not mean that I could just use my wife now more than 27 years anytime I wanted to, unless I had a green light to do that. Are you with me?
Would be surprised how many times the mindset is, though, she's now my property, she's my wife, we're married, I don't have to ask if that's okay, which I don't necessarily believe. I don't necessarily that I buy into that. I don't care if you're used to getting it every night. You may still need her consent. If she doesn't feel good and she says no, just because you're her husband doesn't mean that you get to push that
off. Okay, let me give you the other side. Here's the other side. Now, this is something I've never really fully understood. But this comes to me, too. A lot of women complain to me about the inattentiveness of their men. And I'm saying, you know, I really can't help you with that. Now, that's just my initial response to give comfort to the conversation that's coming. You know, I'll be kind and I'll ask why and what do you think and what are you doing, what is he doing. But I hear more women complaining now about men's lack of sexual attention to them. And I'm really at a loss because I don't have a frame of reference for that. Now, I might say that there are a number of other things that are in the way of in contemporary context that may keep people from being as interested in each other as they may have been heretofore in history. But that's one I don't get. And I hear women tell me, look, I provide him everything he needs. He doesn't even have to work. All I need him to do is be around and be available to me when I want to be available to me. I buy food. I pay rent. I give him a car. I give him spending money. But he won't do me. And, Rebecca, I got no answers for that other than you were the wrong dude. I mean, it gets that simple for me at that point. If you're the person who's not sharing with you, why are you there?
Well, I got one for you. If you are doing, you have become the man. Sorry. I know nobody wants to hear that, but give him back his man card and he might actually participate. But you can't. I mean, I think too many times women and we kind of touched on this when we talked about the Women's March and the whole what I considered absurd nonsense of wearing of the JJ hat, right? I mean, seriously, if you're going to throw it out there in that realm of just absurd insanity, and then you expect a man to truly want that, you know, and I find a whole bunch of issues with that. But, you know, essentially there's a role. You know, they have a role in it, and if you just do everything for them, how do you expect them to be interested? I mean, I just don't know. I don't know how that happens. I mean, I've watched my mother, you know, treat my father like a king for so many years. And in that was their shared intimacy of their relationship. That was how she produced loving interaction for him. So it was a conversation that they had, again, like you said, before they ever got married. So there were certain norms that he expected of her. He was going to go out and work outside of the home, bring home the bacon, yada, yada, yada. And her role would be, home, taking care of the kids, keeping a clean house, keeping the dishes up and going, laundry going, yada, yada, yada. And they're, you know, combined together at night or whatever would look like, however they had that particular side of that conversation. But I don't think that you can just expect a man to just show up and be joyful about the fact that they have no real role in that life or those conversations or the nitty-grittiness of how life happens if you're doing it all for them. That probably sounds odd coming from a woman, but
no, it doesn't. I think what we've hit on are two different perceptions of this experience. For me, if you come by my house and wash my dishes every night, I would ask you to, but you come by and wash my dishes every night, first night you don't, I want to know why you didn't show up. So on one hand, I get exactly what you're saying. I do think this may be a factor as well. I think we've arrived at a time in our development, particularly in Western culture, where people don't know what to do anymore. They don't know what to do with themselves. I say they don't know what to do themselves first, and you get two people who don't know what to do with themselves together, and in my view, you have a mess. And so without some people to help them learn how some things might appropriately work, I think we have some beginnings. But the biggest part of all this for me, and Bonnie and I are writing a book about this now, we're talking to people about you have to negotiate for what you want, and when you don't get what you want, you have to renegotiate, or you may have to make a decision to like, okay, this was a mistake, I need to make another choice. And so these are tough adult-level decisions that people have to get to, because when people don't know how to manage themselves as an individual, two people like that trying to manage as a couple are going to frustrate themselves and probably a whole lot of people around them too. What do you think?
Oh, definitely. And I think that's why so many marriages fall apart. But I think the other aspect of that is we have become so contemporary and so outside of the boundaries of what sex is that there's not the shared intimacy anymore. And I just don't know that you can sustain that raw sex without the intimacy on a long-term, healthy marriage scenario. So if it's all about just bang me and be done, you know, I think you lose. I mean, there's no way you can have a relationship in that, and that'd be the only interface. So there's a huge aspect to where the foreplay and the afterplay and the touching and the just shared level of time and space of being held outside of the actual physical deed, that I just don't think happens anymore. It's rushed. We don't have a lot of time, or, you know, okay, well, the kids are finally asleep and we've got about 20 minutes before I need to be in bed because, I've got an early morning for work tomorrow. And I just think, you know, like life and society has kind of taken over in how we do that anymore. So there's not that you court them until you get them and then you're married and now you have them. And it's like, you know, you got 10 minutes to do it now, where when you were dating, you know, it took all of 4 or 5 hours.
I think this word negotiation becomes more and more important. So we're together and we have children, but let's say we're early 30s to mid 30s. We've got 2 or 3 small children, or, you know, maybe they're 8, 9, 10 years old by now, whatever. They have to be managed, but the relationship has to be managed too. I believe, that negotiation has to be an ongoing conversation, and that those things have to be engaged as much as paying bills, going to work on time, holding some level of respect in family and in community. People don't get just to pick out the pieces that they like. It doesn't work like that. If you're going to love somebody over time, you love the good, the bad, and the ugly, and you even make the ugly feel good because that's your job. You love somebody. Part in that person that you don't really feel comfortable with, that's part of them. So you love that too, and you have them know that that's love. And so if people don't know how to do that, and they're getting together with people who don't know how to do that, then a mess can only be the result. Now, let's say there can be some exceptions to the rule and people figure it out, but that's going to really take people with adult perspectives and the desire to learn and the desire to learn to love, to give to somebody that's really important to them. I think that can happen, but that's work. That's work.
It is. And I think that is one of the other society aspects of what has become sex versus a relationship where the conversation has been pulled out of it. And so when it's just the act itself, again, in the morning, it's empty and it has negative backlash because it was just an act. It had no relationship boundary or form or consummation to it. So there's no, you may have interfaced. And if you, and the bad thing is if you actually connected with that person and you didn't have the conversation, you're going to have one side or the other feeling like would like to maybe invest more or find out more about that person and really kind of navigate something. But because the conversation wasn't had to begin with, the other side of that person walks off and you may never actually see them ever again. And then there's always
right.
that inner what if, coulda, woulda, shoulda backlash that you carry in your being. And, and I think for me that's one of the main things that I'd like to see change, in life and people around me. And if I can do that, if I can give anybody one single thing, is to make them understand how important that conversation is and how important taking, the few extra minutes to ask a few extra questions before you engage in something like that, how much healthier that can just make who you're going to become years later versus
okay,
just,
well, listen, let me
hands up, do it.
I want to take a moment to give a closing comment because I want you to have you're having the last word tonight to kind of give people a takeaway point. But I want to say this quickly. Bonnie and I have never understood couples who do not enjoy talking to each other. I mean, as much as we loved loving each other, we talked and we talked and we still do. And we are at our happiest now after, more than 27 years married and 28 and a half years together. We still talk and we still talk and we still talk and we still like each other and people don't understand us. Even after all these years, we don't just love each other, we like each other. So we've been able to work together in the same office. We work together from home. We're okay. And I know that everybody's not like that, but that's something I believe those of us who know how to do that should take on some responsibility to teach others as much as they can. All right. I was Oscar Crawford tonight with our show conversation. We were dealing with consensual sex. Rebecca is going to close out our program tonight to give you a takeaway from our time together. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for sharing what you're hearing with other people. And we'll see you again in a week. Rebecca.
So for me, I'm going to say it again, so I have said it with every show. I have two standards with which I intentionally live my life. Do not make fear-based decisions and don't take no for an answer. And one of the reasons why I kind of wanted to end with that one is in the realm where we talk about consensual sex is if you're not taking no for an answer, how does that play into that very intricate conversation where you may actually have to step back and take no for an answer? So I always want you to hold that in your realm of thought is that while so many other aspects of life where there's a will, there's a way, there's a ton of other really thought process things that help you catapult over the no or the block, so to speak. This is one area where I think you have to know that there's a hard line in the sand and that at any point in any way, shape, or form you hear no, no has to mean no. And I say that from the dearest parts of my heart because trust me, you don't want to ever put any woman or any man through what I went through for 15 plus years in the navigating out of. So the last thing I want to leave you with, and it's a statement from what Oscar and I know to be as the intentional living of the law of attraction. And I find it very profound, where the voice and vision inside become more profound, more loud and clear than the opinions of the outside, you have mastered your life. And I find I meditate on that particular statement more often than not because when it's sticky, when life gets messy, that's what I have to go to. I have to make my inner calm what's most important.
Good night, Rebecca.
Good night, O.